Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Did You Know Show with your host, Fred Hossie. Hello, Fred.
Hello.
I'm Ray, physics teacher.
And I'm Holly, a Spanish teacher. And anything we talk about today, you can find on dykshow.blogspot.com. We'll put up some links to additional information. And then also you can email Fred at what?
FredHossie@gmail.com.
Right. Hossie is spelled H-A-A-S-E.
All right, so let's go ahead and get started. This week's topic is tornadoes and hailstorms. So, Fred, where do you want to get started with those? And this is the perfect time to do this because
very timely.
Yeah, we're starting to enter severe weather season. Yes, okay. This is the we're starting to get into that. Despite the fact that we had snow here yesterday. All right, Fred. So, where do you want to get started?
Okay. Well, perhaps we could say that this is the beginning of the severe thunderstorm season, and that way we can get around the fact that there's other kinds of severe weather too.
Yes. Okay. So we're talking like tornadoes and hail and those type of systems.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. We're talking about weather phenomena that is brought about by the fact that the atmosphere is what we call conditionally unstable.
All right.
Yeah. And to get an idea what this is about is that if you take a blob of air and reduce the pressure and let it expand against the sides of the wall, it will gradually cool down, and the lower the pressure goes. And it turns out that this will exactly match if you take a blob of air near the ground and just lift it up and assume that it's dry so there's no condensation, and it will cool down at a certain rate per couple of thousand feet.
Okay.
And this is called the dry adiabatic lapse rate. And this happens whenever if the air is stable with respect to dry air, that means that the air will actually cool down more slowly with height or even warm up with height as compared to the dry adiabatic lapse rate. So if you push a blob of air upward, it'll become a little cooler than the surrounding air and sink right back down. So it'll always tend to return back to where it was, which we mean by stable air.
Okay, so that's no thunderstorms and probably not real cloudy or anything either.
No clouds. Yeah,
yep.
I specified dry air too, yep. So that means that rules out clouds.
Yep.
But
and, yep. Go ahead.
Now, if, however, we talk about air that's wet, and assume that for the moment that we got a blob of air, in which it is saturated. That is to say, that in that volume, that the partial vapor pressure is at its maximum given the temperature.
Okay, so that means a lot of water vapor in the parcel.
Right.
The and gas state of water vapor.
Right. And then as you lift this blob of air, it would start cooling. But as it cools, some of that water will condense out as water.
Correct.
Releasing, and this releases heat.
Makes the temperature of the parcel go up more so than it would be if it didn't have the condensation. Is that correct?
Or not quite.
Not quite.
It'll cool more slowly.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Yes.
It won't actually get warmer.
It won't get warmer, but it'll be warmer than what it would be if there wasn't the condensation.
Exactly.
Okay.
So therefore, and if the atmosphere itself had a lapse rate that equal this moist ascent, that's called a moist adiabatic lapse rate.
Okay.
And so now I've defined two of them. We got the dry adiabatic lapse rate, and if you plotted them on a sounding, you know, on a thermodynamic diagram, height versus temperature or pressure versus temperature, the dry adiabatic lapse rate will be to the left of the moist adiabatic lapse rate.
Okay. And we should probably put a link in the show notes to some of those diagrams. I think they're generally referred to as SKU-Ts. Is that right, Fred?
That's correct. There's many different diagrams that are available.
But
the most widely used one in the United States is called the SKU-T.
Okay.
But in Canada and in Europe, they use a different one which looks almost the same, which is called the Tifigram.
I did not know that.
But however, they're used in exactly the same way, and they even look almost the same.
Okay.
All right. So I mentioned that just in case we have somebody outside the U.S. listening.
Yes, which is entirely possible.
All right. Now, if the real atmosphere has a lapse rate that fits between the dry bulb lapse rate and the or what we call dry adiabatic lapse rate and the moist adiabatic lapse rate, this forms unstable situation called conditionally unstable.
Okay.
The condition being is that if the air it becomes saturated, then it will rise along the moist adiabatic and tend to become warmer than the real air. When that blob of air is warmer than the surrounding air, it will tend to keep right on rising.
And when we get the rising, we get the clouds and eventually the thunderstorms, potentially.
That is correct.
Okay.
So, and this is absolutely necessary that the atmosphere fits in between, on the average, fits in between the dry adiabatic lapse rate and the moist adiabatic lapse rate, or you simply can't get thunderstorms or even showers. Now you can get steady rain from stratiform clouds like you sometimes do during especially the winter. But this is occurring of air being saturated and being lifted over a mountain range or along a frontal surface. But because it's stable, it doesn't rise spontaneously, but it's just forced upward by either the terrain or the presence of a different air mass.
Okay.
All right. Now, so to get a thunderstorm and showers, you need to have a lapse rate that's moist adiabatic, or is between the moist adiabatic and the dry adiabatic lapse rate to get thunderstorms. And the more nearly along the dry adiabatic lapse rate the real atmosphere is, generally, the more unstable the atmosphere potentially is.
Okay.
All right. So now we have defined the unstable atmosphere from which thunderstorms go, but this does not quite satisfy tornado or hailstorm situation,
right?
Because other requirements are needed.
Up till now, we've just established that we can get some showers or some thunderstorms or some clouds, but we haven't gotten it to be severe yet. Before we do that, we should mention that when we said the beginning of the severe weather season for tornadoes, we're talking about here in the U.S. in, you know, Tornado Alley or even beyond that, but for the middle part and eastward in the U.S. Correct, Fred?
Right. Or actually, you can say that Tornado Alley is especially prominent from north central Texas northward through central Oklahoma, eastern Kansas, eastern Nebraska, into Iowa.
Okay.
And you have a secondary tornado maxima that lies in the Gulf states, extending parallel to the North Gulf Coast, and is prominent in Mississippi and Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this usually occurs during late winter, early spring, usually just it precedes the main tornado season that occurs on the high plains to the southwest of the Great Lakes to down towards north central Texas.
So there are regions of the world then that don't experience tornadoes. I know there's regions of the United States that don't, but there's entire regions that do not.
That's correct, because of the fact the atmosphere is very stable there. And of course, one such region is Antarctica, because of the strong radiative cooling on over that ice surface, makes for a very stable atmosphere.
Yep.
And another thing is that tornadoes are also infrequent over cold ocean currents, like along the west coast of the United States. Now they're not quite unknown, but they're just very rare because the upwelling cold water, like off of San Francisco, will make the ocean colder than the atmosphere would, so which will stabilize the atmosphere.
Okay.
Making thunderstorms very infrequent.
Yeah. All right. So we've got our showers and thunderstorms. Let's go back to that. Now, what other ingredients do we need to get severe weather, to get the
right.
hail and the tornadoes?
First of all, do a brief excursion pointing out that you can have markedly unstable air, like over just south of the Sahara over Africa. And these produce, in Central Africa is the world's thunderstorm champion. You know, they get an average of about 72 lightning strikes per square kilometer per year.
Oh, wow. Dangerous.
But yet, hailstorms and tornadoes are practically unknown.
Okay.
And
so what's
now,
the difference in the ingredients there?
The difference is this: it is the type of vertical wind shear.
Okay, should we explain what wind shear is briefly for those that haven't listened to past shows where we talked about it?
What is
wind shear, Fred?
Okay, vertical wind shear is that when the wind direction and or speed changes with height.
So it's just a turning of the winds or a changing magnitude as you go up through the atmosphere.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, one thing to note that again in Africa, say over in like in Nigeria and the Ivory Coast and so forth, usually during the summer, the winds in the low levels are blowing from the west southwest, and above that, they're blowing from the east northeast. So you do have a straight line shear, but that is the problem. It's a straight line. And this is not favorable in producing tornadoes and hailstorms.
Okay, so what do we need?
So what you need is not only do you change wind directions, but how you change wind direction is very critical. Now, in the high plains of the United States, you not only have this very unstable air coming up from the Gulf of Mexico into the central U.S., but in the low levels, this flow is from the south or south-southeast or some mm-hmm. southerly direction.
And then it turns to the west as it goes up?
And right, and then it will veer towards the west as you go up. And so that's the critical thing. But one thing is that's interesting is that you need to somehow convert this turning of the wind with height in a horizontal plane to one that's in the vertical plane before you can produce a tornado.
Okay.
In meteorology, we call that the tilting term because the atmosphere is being tilted to get that shear in position to produce a tornado.
Okay.
And to give you an idea how that happens, visualize a rug on your floor and just imagine that the air on the floor itself is moving from the south towards the north wall. Then just at the top of the rug, the winds turn to the west with height. So below the level, the rug is coming in from the south. As you go up through the rug to the just above it is coming in from the west. Now, if along the northern north wall, you pull the rug up, you tilt the edge of the rug up. This produces something interesting because to visualize how the air is moving along the edge of the rug, what'll be happening is that this southerly wind that was existing near the ground, as you tilt it up, will actually have no motion relative to the rug. It's actually going up.
Okay.
Instead of now,
so
there.
Now we've gotten to the vertical direction.
Right now, in the top part of the rug, when you tilt it up, it's blowing from the west. So now what you have is a west flow adjacent to a flow that's just strictly upward.
Okay, so now we have some rotation.
That is correct. What you have is now notice
here,
what we have is what we have now is cyclonic shear, meaning that if you put a little paddle wheel into that edge rug, it would tend to be twisted according to the right-hand rule. If you reach your right hand out and grip, your fingers will wrap counterclockwise, and it'll tend to twist the paddle wheel just like that.
Okay.
Then, if you produce, if you have a thunderstorm, say, scattered along this shear zone, that shear zone then is converted to your rapid spinning motion, and that's your step in developing a supercell, a thunderstorm.
So a thunderstorm that's rotating.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, once we have this thunderstorm that's rotating, that means we probably have a fairly strong thunderstorm. We have the possibility for hail, and I think we talked about hail formation on our previous show. But now, what else, or what's the characteristics of then getting that supercell to actually have a tornado?
Well, one thing is that it's a matter of really taking, I already described that that increase of that twist, that cyclonic twist. In meteorology, we call it vorticity.
Mm-hmm.
When that is, this sort of a twist is concentrated within the cyclonic rotating thunderstorm, you'll sometimes form a little local spot where you'll have a really intense cyclonic vortex,
and
the tornado itself.
So that's the start of the funnel cloud, or and then if it touches the ground, then technically it becomes a tornado.
Exactly.
Okay.
Go
ahead.
Usually because of the vertical wind shear tends to push the middle part of the cloud rapidly towards the east. All right.
Oh, is that because we have the westerly winds aloft?
That's correct.
Okay, so the bulk of the storm is going to get shoved eastward. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And this is another important step in maintaining a supercell. Now, ordinarily without this type of vertical wind shear, when a thunderstorm updraft starts developing, it will tend to start rising so fast. It cannot be fed from below.
So it just kind of goes straight up and then kaput.
And then it tends to break apart because it can't be fed in from the side quickly enough to supply the air as it's going up.
Okay.
But now if you move that cell, that thunderstorm cell, rapidly relative to the surface air, it'll help the low-level influx.
Okay.
And so usually the low level influx will be at its max relative to the cloud, will be on its southeast side. Remember, in the low levels, we've got a south wind.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle levels, you got that west wind. So when you visualize that cloud moving along, that relative to the cloud, you'll have that southeast flow into the southeast corner of the thunderstorm. And that's where your maximum influx is. And often on radar, you'll form a notch at that point.
And that's where the tornado is most likely to be as well, on that farthest southern point of the thunderstorm.
Yeah, or somewhere in there, either there or it could, not necessarily exactly there, but
in
that vicinity.
In that vicinity.
Close. Right.
Okay.
And, yes.
Fred, I was going to ask you, Ray and I go storm chasing. As you know, we've talked about this before, but we generally are in the southeast part of the storm, and I'm the layperson here. So I was just wondering, are there other parts of the storm that a tornado could form in?
The answer is yes, but not all of them. It also is a very interesting thing that I'll mention in connection with that, is that there is a class of thunderstorms. I better back up a little bit, is that as a result of the air being fed in from mainly the southeast side, the thunderstorm has a tendency to drift to the right of the space or the average flow vector in the lower half of the atmosphere.
Right movers. Yep. Stronger storms. They take a jot right of the other ones.
Right. And that what that also indicates, by moving a little bit more to the right, that relative influx in the southeast corner is enhanced.
Which means it's more likely to have a tornado and it's stronger supercell.
That's correct. But now there is a class of supercells that actually moves to the left.
Oh, wow.
And And these will develop. You'll sometimes have a supercell develop, then all of a sudden it will split in two. And one part of it will be a right mover, and the left part will actually move to the left. But now, since it's drifting, since it's moving in about the same direction as a low-level flow, the low-level influx is less well-developed. So as a whole, the left movers are not as intense as the right movers.
So less likely to have a tornado.
But if they do, that's the one that's going to have their tornado most likely on their northwest side.
Oh,
okay.
And so that answers Holly's question about tornadoes located in other parts of the thunderstorm.
And they can pretty much have it anywhere, can't they, Fred? Because
yes,
you have all this rotation, that you could get a little touchdown of a tornado on any part of the storm, because you get these spin ups and you never know when they're going to connect to the ground. Is that a safe statement as well?
Yes.
Tornadoes, the ones that are long lived and do the massive damage and are on the ground for a long time, those tend to be the ones on the southwest corner. Is that correct as well?
Well, on the southeast
corner. Southeast corner.
Right. Although with a radar, it's more towards the southwest side of the storm with a radar picture, but so far as updraft goes,
yeah.
Good grief, I just got a message. My backup needs attention. That can wait.
Yes.
That can wait.
Okay, so on radar, it's on the, when you look at the precipitation, it's on the southwest side of what you see on radar, that little hook, that notch, but it's really technically on the southeast side of the storm.
Or on the southeast of the side of the updraft.
Okay.
Right. And usually the heaviest precip will fall slightly downwind of where the most intense low-level part of the updraft is.
Okay.
Yeah, and here is something else, too, to mention, is you were talking about thunderstorms developing elsewhere. The supercell also has a very interesting structure to it, in that the bottom of the storm tends to be tilted relative to the bottom, tends to be tilted to the north or even a little bit west of north before it turns around and it gets blown off northeastward or eastward. And that's due to the shear and also the tendency of the air to have a little bit of momentum that it had before leaving the ground. And what that does is that causes the tilted cloud to dump rain into the dry middle level air under its northwest side. And so your most intense downdraft will form here.
Okay, hold on a second. We're to the northwest of where the tornado would be?
Yes.
Okay.
And this is the famous rear flank downdraft.
We hear that all the time when we watch, what's that show we watch, Holly?
Storm Chasers.
Storm Chasers, yeah. They're always talking about that, and we just got hit by it. Wait, what do they call it? What'd you call it, Fred?
Just a rear flank downdraft.
Rear flank downdraft. That's it. Yep.
Right.
And yeah, they're always saying RFD. That's right, Holly. That's what they're always saying. We were in the RFD, blah, 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 blah. So, sorry, go ahead.
All right. Now, when this hits the ground, it tends to spread out, forming this outflow boundary.
And those winds can be extremely strong, too.
Sure can.
Rotating like the tornado, but they can still do lots and lots of damage.
Exactly. And a lot of people, when they get hit by this, will swear on a stack of Bibles that we had a tornado.
But in reality, it was not.
By inspecting the damage, you'll notice that all the trees are blown over in the same direction.
Yep.
And so that rules out tornado, because tornadoes, they'll tend to fall in different directions in different places.
And Holly, we've seen these like when we've been chasing the planes, and there's like just all this dust and junk, and it's just all going the same direction. It looks really scary, and it's not a tornado. It's just a bunch of junk. But you know, the winds can be extremely strong, easily over 70 miles per hour, right, Fred?
Right.
Yeah.
So in other words, you know,
be enough to knock your car if you're going the wrong direction fast enough to, you know, knock your car out of control, kind of thing, if you get hit by it all
right
at once.
In fact, I even personally experienced an outflow boundary in Fort Worth of one of these thunderstorms, in which hit us with 90 mile per hour winds.
And sometimes the temperature drop can be pretty impressive as well.
That's correct, because the air in the middle levels is often very dry.
outside of Wichita one time. I think it went from in the 70s to in the 30s, or it was something extreme like that. And it was like one of those ones where it was above 70 miles per hour, and it was something else. So,
yeah, anyway, too, now this outflow boundary that forms, and it tends to, well, from the where it hit the ground, it tends to spread out kind of radially, but the storm is moving. So most of the outflow boundary can actually take place to the southwest of the thunderstorms, and they will lift and form a band of cumulus extending from the supercell. Mm-hmm. And these cumulus, as you get further and further from the storm going southwest, they get smaller and smaller. But occasionally, one of these cumulus that's developing along the outflow boundary itself will develop into a thunderstorm. And indeed, the very first tornado I ever saw developed from a cumulus that was developing along such an outflow boundary.
Okay.
And so that again answers Holly's other question about tornadoes developing elsewhere. But these tornadoes tend to be rope-like, short-lived, and no big deal.
Okay. All right. So do we have anything else we got to talk about here with tornadoes, Fred?
And, not really, just except just to mention, of course, we already touched on that they are connected to the thunderstorms and that they will move with a thunderstorm. So if you know which way the thunderstorm is going, you want to avoid the tornado, you can just sort of move perpendicular to its movement to avoid it. And if you can't avoid it, then you just sort of hunker down and hope for the best.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. and
we try to get into position to see them, but obviously we actually now when we storm chase, Fred, we have are you familiar with satellite radio?
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, with the company that does satellite radio, it's one company now. They also offer weather service. So we have like a little tiny antenna that just sticks on our roof, and no matter where we're at, we can get a variety of information, the most important which is every 5 minutes we get an updated radar for all the radar starts in the radar sites in the U.S. So we actually have, you know, before it was with cell phone coverage, it was spotty at times, and obviously if you have nasty weather and you get gust fronts, or you get a tornado to get, you know, knock over a couple cell towers, you can lose cell phone coverage. But we're actually able to have radar out there the whole time. The only bad thing is that it only anything above, I think it's 55 dBZ, just has the same color. So it's a little bit tougher to see some of the structure of the storm, but it's sufficient to keep us from getting, you know, clobbered by a supercell, you know, in a tornado, we hope. And to help us get a lot closer, be a little bit more confident in our decisions.
Now, one of the interesting things, too, is that the big F3 or greater or category or F3 or greater tornadoes usually are associated with supercells. But now we also can get tornadoes with ordinary air mass thunderstorms. But these are usually rope-like and usually F2s or less. Okay. Commonly F1s, and we get a lot of those in the Houston area along the Gulf Coast.
In fact, isn't in addition to along the Gulf Coast there in Houston, doesn't Florida get a ton of tornadoes, a bunch of weak ones every year?
Yeah, same thing. It's the same sort of thing. And because the vertical wind shear is not favorable for those big, massive tornadoes, but you get these little short-lived rope-like tornadoes, and if they happen to be over water, then you call them water spouts.
Yep, and when the water spout moves on land, that counts as a tornado, correct?
And this brings up, too, did you know that, this is really amazing trivia, that UK has about the same number of funnel cloud reports as the U.S.
Oh, wow, I had no idea. I didn't even know they had.
And these all form in very cold air. When you get one of these cold air domes wandering over UK, and you get these within these cold air domes with the sea surface temperatures being much warmer than the air temperatures, you'll develop convective showers of snow, of grapple, and of rain. And these will occasionally drop funnel clouds on you, but...
So funnel clouds and snow? Did I hear that right?
Yes, you heard it right.
I didn't know that.
And But on the other hand, though, because usually when the mixing ratio is relatively low, as it is in cold air, the tornadoes that develop under these conditions are usually F0 or F1s. So
huge worries. I mean, maybe a little bit of damage, but it's not going to, you know, pull you
right,
apart.
Right, no more than the damage that's done by the embedded mid-latitude storm that the whole thing's associated
right,
with.
Right, right.
And so these high-latitude tornadoes is something that is not very often suspected, but actually, though, in Europe, they don't pay much attention to them because they don't do much anything.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, go ahead.
Yes. And, well, I was going to also point out that in spite of what they say, you know, talking about hailstorms, the big tornadoes are associated also with major hailstorms, and they tend to follow parallel paths. You'll get the tornado moving on the right-hand side, then big hail immediately to the left, and then left of that would be smaller hail, and then left of that, heavy rain.
Okay.
And that, but unlike what most people think, that hail does not recycle in a cloud, I mean, does not circulate in the cloud up and down several times, producing those concentric circles. The concentric circles, if it was done by that way, those concentric circles, a white part would
be... Wait, hold on a second. What do people think that... What happens with hail? I didn't catch that.
Oh, they think that
they think
that
it's not right. But what do they think?
That the hailstorms are recycled through the cloud several times, and you can count the number of these recyclings.
I had never
by
heard
counting
that.
The layers.
But I had not heard that before. But okay, go ahead. Sorry.
And you're missing nothing because it happens to be incorrect.
Okay, so what really happens?
What really happens is this, is that as a hailstone is falling, it'll flow through blobs of air, which may have a lot of liquid water being wafted up from below by the updraft, and they'll coat the ice, hailstone, and the drops when they hit won't freeze right away, but kind of flow a little bit, then freeze, producing clear ice.
Yeah.
If it flows through a slightly drier part of the cloud, where there's very little what you would call big water droplets, but instead now you got super cooled tiny cloud droplets, which freezes
right
instantly
away
when they hit,
yeah,
trapping air bubbles, and this produces the white layer.
Right, so it's just a slightly different process for different parts of the storm when it's forming. That makes sense.
That's correct, and if it were, a lot of people think that white represents a layer of snow that the hailstone picks up, but if it were, by using polarized light, you could pick up that six-sided crystal of a snowflakes, and you do not.
Okay. All right. Does that about wrap it up, Fred?
That about wraps it up.
All right. Well then.
Fred, I wanted to ask you, do you go storm chasing, or did you ever enjoy doing that?
I've done very little of it, actually. For one thing, is down here along the Gulf Coast, it's a terrible place to chase tornadoes because the precipitation's much heavier than further north and or west. And also, the clouds are lower, so it's very difficult to see much.
Yeah, and that's what's so great about central or western Kansas and Nebraska is that it's flat. There aren't a lot of trees, and you can see the tornado nice and clear, or you can see the storm structure nice and clear. Versus like chasing anywhere else in the country, it has its other problems in terms of trying to see it. You have to get really, really close, and then it can be a little bit scary, to say the least, especially if you've got hills and trees around you. But that's not a problem down in Houston. It's more of the low cloud base and the fact that there's so much other rain and whatnot with every single system, right, Fred?
Right, and yep. We call it tornadoes along the Gulf Coast tend to be precipitation wrapped.
Yes. Yeah. So rain wrapped tornadoes, can't really see them unless they're about to hit you. All right. Well, that was another edition of the Did You Know show. I'm Ray.
And I'm Holly.
Check out the show notes at dykshow.blogspot.com. And you can email Fred and us at fredhaase@gmail.com. And Haase is spelled H-A-A-S-E. You can also reach me at twitter.com/psharkr.
And I am twitter.com/holly23.
And Fred, thank you again.
All right, and we'll see you later.
All right, until next time.